when you have a complex estate with money all over the place, different banks, different advisors, holding companies, real estate holdings, it can be a lot of work to settle an estate over a year or a year and a half period. And imagine for someone who has not been, as you mentioned, communicated that that's their role, and they don't have the knowledge or skill set, they could end up feeling a lot of anxiety.
Hello, everyone. I'm Sejal Patel. Welcome to Strictly Money, your go-to source for navigating your financial needs. The Great Wealth Transfer. You may have heard of it or you may have not heard of it, but guess what? It is underway. That's right. $1 trillion is about to change hands between now and 2026. A lot of Gen X, which is me, and millennials are going to be beneficiaries as well as women. But here's the problem. Most people are not prepared for this. They are not having important conversations. They do not have the estate plan in place. And the beneficiaries do not have the financial skills and education to manage this inheritance. This is a topic that has been dear to my heart for 2 years. I've been very vocal about it. I've been talking to a lot of financial services companies about how to prepare this great wealth transfer, running workshops. This is something that I do. So I'm thrilled to be covering it today on the show. I have the perfect guest. You are going to love her. Twi Lam is a certified financial planner. She is also a money coach with Objective Financial Planners, and she joins me now. Hi, Twi. Welcome to Strictly Money.
Hi, Sejal. Wonderful to be here with you today.
So I'm really glad that you are here because I've been sounding the alarm bells for about 2 years now that, you know, there's this massive financial shift going on right now. You're seeing boomers passing their wealth on to the next generation and spouses also passing their wealth on. Typically, it's the man because typically the man has a shorter lifespan. So you have a lot of people who are going to be benefiting money or benefiting from wealth, at least. And a lot of people are not prepared.
Agreed. As most of us know who are in the industry, it's in the trillions of dollars that is passing hands over the next few decades. And mainly from boomer generation to, you know, the Gen Zs and Xs. One of the stats that I read is that the majority is going to actually land in the hands of millennials. And as you mentioned, not only from spouse, you know, the man to the husband, potentially to the wife, but the millennial generation is very specific in that, you know, there's a lot of single females as well.
Yeah.
Money going to generations that, you know, are not quite prepared on how to manage this level of wealth.
Yeah. And I think one of the bigger issues is that the important conversations we are not being had. And we know that if you're not talking about money, it's very unlikely that you've learned how to manage money. Why do you think this is an issue?
Oh, it stems from family roots of, you know, how money is typically a taboo topic, right? We don't generally sit around the family table and talk about, oh, how much do you make? How's your investment portfolio doing? Or, you know, how are you feeling about money?
You've been in the industry for about 20 years. Is that more common than not?
That's a rarity.
Where they do talk about money.
Where they do talk about money, it's a rarity. Most of the conversations I have with clients, they did not have those types of conversations with their parents. For the most part, the exposure that they had to money was memories growing up of, you know, when we go deeper than the numbers, it's about, you know, their experiences around money as a child. I had one client share with me that her earliest memory of money was asking her parents for ice cream because they walked by an ice cream shop. And the first response her mom said was, "Honey, money doesn't grow on trees."
Wow.
So how do you think that impacted a little seven-year-old?
It's a scarcity mindset is what it does. We know that.
That's right. So she grew up to develop, you know, an avoidance of money because it was linked to scarcity.
Did your parents talk to you about money?
Oh, I am an anomaly, I believe. You know, I come from an immigrant family. We immigrated to Canada as refugees from Vietnam, part of the boat people. So my parents at the time, had three young children, and they worked three jobs each. And I'm grateful because being an anomaly, my mother spoke openly about money from a young age. I recall her, you know, sharing with me how much they made at work, at each side job that they had, how much the rent was, you know, how much groceries would cost. And she, you know, always instilled in me, from what I recall, like that discipline of if there's something that you want, we, you know, make sure you set money aside for it. So she was a saver.
Isn't that interesting? So we have parallel lives. My parents talked about money as well, and a very similar situation. They were immigrants. They worked incredibly hard. I knew what they made. I knew why they made the decisions that they did, probably by the age of 7. And like you, Tui, I thought that was normal. I thought everyone talked about money until I was in my 20s and I came into the financial industry. And my first job was an advisor's assistant. And I realized, wow, no one talks, they don't talk about money. So it is very interesting. And I don't really, I don't know about you, because I do get asked, is this a cultural thing? I'm not sure it is, because I know a lot of people who don't talk about money that are in very similar situations in, you know, extended family members, for example. So I don't know exactly what triggers it, but we know that it is important. I want to go back to parents who won't sit down with their children. What do you think? I know it's a taboo, but what do you think in your experience that they're really afraid of?
You know, this is from my experience in terms of the parents that I'm sitting down with. And a big piece of that, the fear that they have as parents is that they themselves don't feel that they are equipped and financially savvy enough to be able to impart, you know, that knowledge to their kid. That's number one, other than the feeling of not having a level of comfort. So they wouldn't even know how to get those conversations started. With lack of confidence means, you know, you just don't even know how to get started and what to talk about. And that's a big piece is, you know, they shared with me, Tui, I don't want to pass on my money beliefs and my lack of knowledge to my kid. I want them to have a good start and a good grounding and foundation when it comes to finances.
And they probably are, I'm assuming, that they're probably afraid that their own children or whoever the beneficiary is, and, you know, whether it's the husband or wife in this case, that they don't have the financial knowledge as well. So I know I see this. They're very afraid of, you know, I've worked really hard for this wealth, and I'm worried that the next generation or whoever I pass it to is going to squander it away.
Oh, yes. That is one of the top, I would say, top three concerns of the parents that I'm sitting down with. That's one of their top three concerns is, you know, the fear of mismanage of money. And not intentionally, as you had mentioned, it's just that lack of financial savviness, the lack of financial literacy. You know, they themselves, as I mentioned, did not impart that knowledge. And as they were learning in their adult life, by that time, you know, most of their kids were on their own and they weren't having those open roundtable discussions. So it wasn't being imparted through parenting or parents. And secondly, there's a lack of it in our educational system as well. So, you know, where is that knowledge coming from? So there's one, that fear of mismanagement of money is real. One of the other concerns is, you know, an adult child that might have an intellectual or physical disability, right? How to handle that in terms of passing on to the next generation. Another concern that I'm faced with every so often.
Well, not everything is lost, right? Because there are things that we can do, and there are things that I think that the financial industry can do. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that. But first, we're going to take a commercial break because we want to hear from our sponsors, BMO ETFs. We'll be right back.
Are you looking to enhance the level of cash flow from your investments? BMO ETFs has you covered with their covered call ETFs. These ETFs generate cash flow from two sources, the dividend yield from the underlying securities and the premium generated from selling the call options. BMO covered call ETFs strike a balance between generating cash flow and participating in the growth of rising markets with your experienced portfolio management team and effective strategy with over 10 years of history. BMO ETFs is the largest covered call ETF provider in Canada, covering 13 covered call ETFs across a range of strategies across regions, countries, and sectors. Visit BMOETFs.com to learn more. Please read the ETF facts or prospectus of the BMO ETFs before investing.
Welcome back. I'm here with Thuy Lam of Objective Financial Planners. Thuy, we have been talking about the important conversations that need to happen, especially with this great wealth transfer happening. How are you supporting clients?
That's a great question, Sejal. On both sides of the spectrum, actually, I'm supporting clients. So both as parents, the parents with wealth, who are concerned, as we had mentioned, about potential mismanagement of money, or sometimes they don't have that concern because they feel their child, if they have one child, is pretty financially savvy and responsible, but usually there's more than one child, and as we know, not all would they would feel so. But so yes, on one side of the spectrum, parents who have concerns about, you know, how do I pass on the wealth to my children in a tax-effective way, in a way that, you know, gonna carry out my wishes, and then also to ensure that, you know, they have the skills, the knowledge, the know-how to manage the money so that it continues to work for them and service them. So that's the one hand, the parenting side, and so we go through the steps, you know, for parents to ensure that they have enough for their lifetime, and then before planning for this, you know, the potential pre-gifting or intergenerational wealth transfer. And so then on the other side of the spectrum, I've had actually quite a few requests from parents asking me if I would be open to meeting and having a coaching session or sessions with their adult children. So this is that gap that currently, you know, is not readily available in, you know, the marketplace in the financial planning industry. And I think that's one key gap that we in our profession, you know, we have a duty to fill and to be able to equip that younger generation with the skill sets, the foundational pieces to build, you know, a good solid foundation for resilience, as well as understanding, you know, the utilization of credit and how to manage their cash flow, their ins and out, being in tune with their numbers and what it all means.
Yeah, it's such an important gap that you are filling, because like you said, if parents don't have the financial skills to teach their children or the beneficiaries, this is where I think the financial industry plays an important role. This is exactly, you know, one of the reasons why I created my own financial education business. And, you know, I think the financial industry is slowly waking up, at least they better wake up, because the other statistic that's alarming is that when a husband, for example, passes the wealth on to their spouse, in this case, the wife, we know that there's an 80% chance that the wife is going to change advisors. So that wealth goes. And also, I'm assuming the same thing's going to happen with the next generation as well, with the younger generation, because they've probably never engaged with this advisor and they're probably going to find their own if that's the case. So kudos to you. Do you think that, what would you like to see from the financial industry do more?
Oh, that's a great question. I think it starts with just the makeup of the financial advisory, financial planner force. You know, as you probably have seen in this profession, you and I are a rarity. There's not a lot of diversity. You know, when I joined the industry 20 years ago, I just had to look around the room. At that time, I was an investment advisor, and it was mainly all gray-haired white men. Mm-hmm.
The fact still that is.
Yes.
It's changing. But it
is changing. Yeah. So today, I think about 15 or 20% of advisors and planners are female. Out of that, maybe 5% are Black and Latino. Yeah. So, you know, we're moving the needle. not quite fast enough to keep pace with the diversity of our population. So I think that's where it starts, is with the hiring process, the education to go out there to increase the diversity of the advice givers, so that there's, you know, more of a better fit and clients are able to relate. And number two, more services available to address these, having these open conversations about money and supporting, you know, not just the investment planning, the retirement planning, but also these types of conversations that we're having today about the deeper workings of money and how it impacts, you know, our overall financial well-being and our confidence when it comes to making financial decisions.
I'm so glad you said that, because I have a lot of conversations with a lot of executives in the financial services firm. And, you know, I always try to remind them, you know, you're providing a wonderful solution. You know, it's services, it's not just products, but it literally is solutions. But I think advisors forget that on the other side of that conversation, while you're doing that, they have a lot of emotions and fears, especially fears, I think, going on that they may not feel comfortable talking about. And that often is the obstacle in them doing the things, you know, and executing on the things that you want them to do. So I'm glad you mentioned that, Twi. I want to switch gears, because I know we've talked a lot about the conversations, and you touched on this, and that is, you know, making sure that the wealth is being passed on in an efficient way. What I have also discovered in my line of work and in around education is that there is a lot of misconceptions between what an estate plan is and a will is. People seem to think that, well, I have a will, so everything's okay. It's not the same. A will is a part of an estate plan. And I try to remind people, just because you have a will doesn't mean that you're set up to actually execute on that will. Can you talk a little bit about this?
Sure. That's a really interesting topic. And you are right on. A will is not an estate plan. It is a component of an estate plan, a component of a holistic estate plan. So when we are talking about estate plan, we're talking about, you know, first of all, if you do have a will, if you do, then kudos, that's wonderful, because over 60% of Canadians don't have a will. So that's a great start, making sure your will is up to date, right? So in Ontario, we know that when you get married, your will is automatically revoked, right? It's no longer valid. So you should always have an updated will and review it and make sure that your circumstances, your wishes are still the same. The other component of a will that I always encourage is, you know, you have named an executor of your will, or you have named a power of attorney to look after your finances or to look after your health, should you be not able to at some point. Have you had conversations with these executors and power of attorneys that you've named?
Very important, isn't it? Because I know people who name their executors and they don't know that they're the executor.
It is more common than we think.
I know. I know. And people forget that it is a big role sometimes. Like, there's a lot of responsibility on an executor.
When you have a complex estate with money all over the place, different banks, different advisors, corporations, holding companies, real estate holdings, it can be a lot of work to settle an estate over a year or a year and a half period. And imagine for someone who has not been, as you mentioned, communicated that that's their role, and they don't have the knowledge or skill set, they could end up feeling a lot of anxiety. So that's one, another key component. Another part of an estate plan is just overall, you know, tax planning, to be able to transfer asset tax efficiently. It's planning in advance. How do we do that? Do we name direct beneficiaries for registered plans? Should we or should we not add on joint ownership? You know, do we flow things through the will? And so it's working with professionals to ensure that your wishes are met and that you do, you know, you're able to minimize taxes. But, you know, sometimes people run into the issue of trying so hard to minimize taxes when it works against them, because then their estate plan falls apart and the assets don't flow the way that they wish.
Yeah. There's two questions I want to ask. The first one is, does it make sense? I know the answer to this, but for our viewers and listeners, does it make sense to have all your children as executors?
Oh, that's a great question. My personal perspective and view is that usually, even though all four kids are named as executors, it's usually one that steps up to the plate and takes the leadership in that role, right? When you think about it, it is difficult for all, let's say you have three kids and they're living at different parts of the country or different parts of the world, to come together at the same time to be able to go through the estate settlement process.
I agree with that. And you typically do see one that steps up. The second point that I guess it's more of a point than a question, but I see a lot of comments on, you know, Facebook and these communities that say, you know, I'm going to get a will. And they seem to think that it's the lawyer's responsibility to make sure everything is executed. A will is obviously a legal document, but I think it's also very important to have a financial planner involved, because the lawyer doesn't play that role.
Yeah, you are 100% correct. So the role the lawyer plays is a very important one. And it is the, you know, drafting of that legal document to make sure that it, you know, valid, that it stands up, and that your wishes are fulfilled the way that you have communicated to the lawyer. So the importance of working with the financial planner is you could do some pre-will planning work. So we do offer that service at our firm, and other firms may also offer. So what we call pre-will planning and pre-estate, really the estate plan, is what you would be working with your financial planner. And when you have a draft of your wishes, that is a document you can take to the lawyers, and the lawyer will make it all valid in the courts. And so that is the role of a lawyer, is drafting of the legal document. Upon death and settlement of an estate, again, in terms of the execution, when that happens, where you're looking for support is, again, any services, financial services, like a financial planning firm that would assist in executor, agent of executor, or executor support services to execute and settle the estate after death.
Yeah, so important to make that distinction. Twi, you are a financial planner. You are also a money coach. So again, for our listeners and viewers, can you explain what the difference is?
Sure, that's a great question. As you know, money coaches, financial coaches, it's a newer industry. Yeah, maybe the last decade or so. So not too many people are familiar with the differences. And I'll put it this way to give you a really good example. And if someone is coming down to what are your needs? So if you are someone who has a need of, you know, can I afford to retire in 5 years or in 10 years? Or, you know, estate planning, as we've just been discussing, I need to put together an estate plan, a comprehensive estate plan for my family. That is the need, and that need can be fulfilled by financial planning. So financial planning takes a very holistic approach, and you're going to actually walk away with, you know, a written out strategy, as well as potentially, if it's a retirement plan, year over year modeling of, you know, fancy charts and tables to model your income, expenses, you know, your investment savings over time. And then you'll see a depletion, or what I call, you know, drawdown strategy during retirement, and how your assets accumulate and decumulate over time. So that's the need of a financial planner. Where the distinction is with a coach, the coach isn't always a CFP, certified financial planner. We just happen to be here at Objective Financial.
Yeah, you are.
It's rare. It's rare to have a coach that's a certified financial planner. But typically a coach focuses more, they intertwine understanding what a client's goals and objectives are, the way that they want to live their life, and they help you to fit your cash flow to be able to you know, make progress and hit your goals. So I would say the focus is a lot more on cash flow planning, as well as the deeper workings of money that we have talked about.
Yeah, so the beliefs, mindset, the challenges.
Mm. Sometimes, you know, working with couples, for example, for some reason over the past few weeks, couples who want to upsize their home, and even though, you know, we might have run the numbers to show that they can afford to upsize their home and still maintain their level of lifestyle and savings, it's more the mental piece, like they can't get past because of the anxiety associated with having bigger expenses.
Okay. So yeah, that's where you can see a combination of both. You need the planning part, but you also need to walk through some of your values and emotions through that as well.
Yes.
Okay. Well, we will put your website link in the show notes for anyone who is interested and wants to reach out. We are almost at the end of this podcast, but before I let you go, Twee, I always ask my guests three rapid fire questions. So are you ready to play?
Of course.
Okay. I have slightly different questions for you, though. The first question is, what is the best financial advice or habit that you picked up from your parents?
Well, I did mention that my mom is the money manager of the house. And so
same with mine.
Yeah. Yes. From a young age, I would say the best money habit that she imparted was, you know, to save for a rainy day, save for anything that you want or that's important to you. And I did just that.
My mom said the same thing.
To some extent, it's worked against me, but now I have that awareness, right? Being a saver, I talk about that a lot because savers can become hoarders of money.
Yes. Yeah. And a hoarder is when you have a fear of parting with money. Yeah.
That's correct. A fear of parting with it, because seeing it accumulate makes us feel just so much more, you know, peaceful and confident.
Yeah.
Yes. So that would be my number one learning and habit that I picked up.
What about money do you wish you did learn earlier in life?
Oh, that's a great question. I would say, you know, I wish I did learn earlier the principles of compounding growth and investing. I learned on my own the hard way, because I saw how my parents did not like debt. They were focused on paying down their mortgage and worked, you know, long hours just to pay down that mortgage quicker. So, you know, that's what I grew up seeing. However, I at some point I kind of learned about investing, and I opened my RSP when I was in high school. And I took advice from, at that time, a bank teller who sold me a mutual fund, like a global science and technology mutual fund.
Wow. Yeah.
I lost a lot of money in that. But I kind of wish that I learned earlier the principles of investing and asset allocation, so that I didn't put all my eggs in one basket.
That's a good one. That's a good one. And sometimes we do forget that investing and that power of compounding is really important, and that sometimes it makes sense to not just pay off all your debt, but really maybe balance it, right? And everyone's different, but I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's a conversation that I think I have a lot. And it's the question that I probably get asked the most is, you know, should I pay down my debt or should I invest? And it depends on the situation, but sometimes there's room for both. The last question, if you were to enact a law, imagine if you had those powers, Twee, but if you were to enact a law that would help people prioritize their financial health, what would it be?
Oh, that is a good one. I think that it would definitely be, you know, mandatory personal finance courses in school, and not just on the numbers side, you know, to make it fun, interactive, and relatable, but also on the money mindset side and the awareness about our money habits that we might have picked up and which ones are going to continue to serve us and which ones will not. But definitely, I would say the educational system and programs to support parents who want to have those open conversations and don't know where to start.
Love it. As you know, financial education is dear to my heart. So
yes. I know.
I'm glad you mentioned that one. Tui, thank you so much for your time today and all your insights. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Sejal. It's been a pleasure and enjoyable as well.
Well, thank you so much. Tui Lam, Objective Financial Planners. Well, that does it for this edition of Strictly Money. Don't forget to subscribe and comment, leave a review, and share it with your friends. I'll see you back here next week. Until then, stay well, stay wise, and stay wealthy.